Today's program has been brought to you by Hearst Ranch, the nation's largest single-source supplier of free-range, all-natural, grass-fed, and grass-finished beef. For more information, visit HearstRanch.com. Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Okay, it is 1 o'clock and you are tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. You're listening to The Farm Report, and I am your host, Erin Fairbanks. And today we are on the line with Willie Galloway, author of Grow, Cook, Eat, A Food Lover's Guide to Vegetable Gardening. Willie, how are you?
I'm good. Good afternoon.
Good, good, good. Welcome to the show. So we're connecting with you on the West Coast. You're in the Portland area, right?
Yep, I live in Southeast Portland, Oregon.
Awesome. So I'm excited to, well, actually, I'm a little nervous today because I'm about to make a kind of a confession here. I think people may be surprised to learn this, but I actually don't know anything about gardening. I've never gardened ever in my life. I'm, you know, a passionate cook. I've worked with livestock. I know a lot about parts of gardening, but I've actually never done it, and I'm not really sure what my problem is. For whatever reason, it hasn't made it onto the list, and I feel like people are always a little surprised to learn that. I was just back visiting my brother in Michigan, and he has this beautiful garden plot in his backyard, and we're walking around it, and I'm like, damn, why don't I do this? What is my problem? And I think that's one of the things that really attracted me to your book is you really come to gardening from an eater's perspective. And I was hoping maybe you could tell us a little bit about how you got into gardening, and then what was the process that led you to put your knowledge into book form.
Yeah, so I grew up in Cheyenne, Wyoming, and my mom had a really big garden when I was a little girl. It took up about a third of our backyard. And so I would go out there with her and garden. And, you know, as I got older, I worked at nurseries and out at a ranch, and just kind of always had my finger in the gardening world. And after college, I got a job at Organic Gardening Magazine. And I ended up working for them for many years, and I was their West Coast editor. And I got to really just meet so many people in the vegetable gardening world, plant breeders and really amazing home gardeners and plant physiologists. And I just, it was kind of like 8 years of on-the-job training, so I really learned a lot while I had that job.
That's great. It sounds like you got a chance to really get in depth. So for someone like me, someone kind of new to the gardening world, I wonder if you can take us through, like, you know, what would your approach be for someone to get started on something small scale, where you either have like a small patch that you have access to, or maybe even if it's just, you know, a couple of window boxes. I mean, what do we need to be thinking about, and what are the decisions that go into making your first foray into planting food?
Well, I think the first most important thing to do is grow food that you like to eat, you know, something that you're excited about and you really want to harvest for yourself. So, you know, in my own garden, we're just renting a house right now. It's a lot smaller than other gardens I've had in the past. And so I'm growing a lot of salad greens and, you know, tomatoes because I love to harvest those, and beans.
Nice.
So, because I just don't have a ton of space. So but that's kind of what I was focusing on this year. And, you know, just start small because, you know, you'll end up growing a lot of food even in the small space, and it can get kind of overwhelming. So, you know, your first couple of years, you don't need to plant a huge, gigantic garden to be a gardener. Just growing, you know, like one raised bed or some whiskey barrel-sized containers, that can be a good start, and you can actually really get a lot of food out of a small space. But I think that it's important to really grow stuff that you like.
to start small. I mean, I think that's my thing. I always feel like if I'm going to get into gardening, I have to have this kind of, you know, immaculate, planned out, kind of long-term vision, when really, I mean, it can be as simple as like going to the Green Market's plant sale in the spring and picking out a few, you know, potted herbs and engaging in that way. You, in your book, kind of go through the basics for anyone who's interested in setting up a garden, and you kind of talk about different scales and different tools, and I'm wondering if you could tell us a little bit about what you would consider essential gardening tools.
Yeah, you know, so the thing about gardening is there's this book out there called, like, the $64 tomato, where this guy has, you know, an existential crisis making a garden, and he calculates that his tomatoes cost $64 each, and it definitely doesn't need to be that way. There's no rule that vegetables have to grow in, like, you know, rectangular wooden boxes. They'll grow in, you know, orange buckets, and so you need, you know, soil and something that contains it, so either in the ground or a container, and then you need a spade and a trowel for planting things, a hose for watering. I think a watering can with a rose, which is the little filter that goes on the top so that the water doesn't gush out, is a really good thing to have. And then my favorite tool, one that I think is really important, is something called a stirrup hoe. It's shaped like a stirrup on a saddle, and what it does is it allows you to weed plants out really quickly and easily when they're small, and it can really help keep weeds down. So I think that's a great time-saving tool for keeping the weeds down in your garden neat and without having to, you know, spend hours out there weeding.
Yeah, because I think we all probably have better things to do. Although I know a lot of people who really find a lot of pleasure in ridding their garden or ridding their spaces of weeds as kind of a stress reliever. One of the other things that I find so interesting about gardening is the kind of giving yourself permission to do it, I think, has been my main issue. But this idea of gardening in an urban space versus gardening in a rural space, and wondering if you would have kind of different advice for people in different locations with regards to, I don't know, tips on where to get access to tools or seeds or seedlings and some of the kind of basic components, and how that might vary whether you're living in Brooklyn or somewhere kind of less urban than here.
Yeah, so, you know, Brooklyn does have a pretty thriving community garden scene, and there's, you know, rooftop farms in Brooklyn. There's, if you are really interested in growing in Brooklyn, you can definitely, you know, hook into this really vibrant gardening community. In super urban spaces, though, say you just have an apartment with a balcony, to grow food, you need sun. So you need a spot that gets 6 or 8 hours of bright direct sunlight a day. So if your apartment faces north and it's, you know, shaded by other buildings, you might not be able to grow food at your house. And so you'll probably need to find a community garden. And community gardens are all over the place. I was just in rural Wyoming in this little town that has like 8,000 people, and they had 3 or 4 amazing community gardens. And no matter where you live, a community garden is a great place to garden because, A, you get to interact with people you might not meet any otherwise, and B, there's usually good gardeners there, and really the best way to become a better gardener is to observe other people and talk with them about what they're doing and grow the food yourself. So I think community gardens, no matter what size community you live in, are really a great place to grow food. And, you know, they're nice if you don't have a lot of space and you want to grow more space. You can, you know, have a plot. Or even if you have a lot of space at home, maybe you just want the opportunity to grow food with other people.
Yeah. Now, you also, I mean, in addition to your work through Organic Gardening Magazine and growing your own stuff and working on the book, you also do or have done like a call-in radio show for growers with who are running into problems in their garden. I mean, what were some of the kind of trends as far as common questions that you got through there? Did things kind of tend to be in the same area, or did people really jump all over the board?
You know, I get a lot of questions about harvesting. So even gardeners who've grown food for a long time don't always realize that when you have a garden, you know, you get to observe a plant through its whole life cycle. And because of that, you have an opportunity to harvest plants at different stages, stages that you might not see at a grocery store or even sometimes at farmers markets. And also, you get to eat different parts of the plant that are often, because they bruise or wilt or just don't stay looking nice, are taken off the plant and composted well before they ever get to a grocery store. So, you know, you can eat the greens of all sorts of root vegetables and, you know, flowers from different plants and even the roots of plants. I think that's something that people don't realize, and I get a lot of questions about. I'm not exactly sure how I'm supposed to harvest my lettuce or what I'm supposed to pull, like when do I pull my beets out, you know. So in the book, I really tried to focus on helping people understand what all those stages of harvest were and also then what they could eat on each plant.
Can you take us through like one of your favorite plants that has a multitude of edible stages and talk a little bit about what that looks like and what they taste like and how the same plant essentially can have a huge variety of tastes and textures at different points in its life cycle?
Yeah, sure. So I think a great example is a radish. So first of all, there's a lot of different kinds of radishes. There's you know, the round radishes that we always see on, they're like left over on the vegetable tray at office parties. No one wants to eat them, right? Because they're like, sort of have like a chalky exterior and they're pithy and gross. Like, that's why people think they don't like radishes, because they've only ever had them in that setting. They're actually really good if you harvest them out of your garden. But then there's daikon radishes and winter radishes. There's different kinds of radishes, and they come in different colors too, pink, white, purple, you know, red, of course. Even sort of like a greenish color, yellow. So radishes are fun right there. Like, you just have this opportunity to grow stuff that you're never going to see at the store. And then, you know, say you're growing garden radishes, they have, their greens are delicious. So if you harvest a bunch of the roots and you have all the tops, you don't want to put them in a salad because they have this kind of Velcro texture that's really just not great in a salad. But if you cook those greens as you would spinach, that texture completely disappears. The greens kind of have a little bit of a mustard green-ish flavor to them, and they're just full of calcium and iron, and they're super helpful. So you can eat the roots, the greens, and then when radishes go to seed, they get pretty tall. They'll get about 18 inches to 2 feet tall, and they'll get branches with these beautiful sort of pink or white flowers that you can use as a garnish on salads. And then following the flowers, they get these little teardrop-shaped little seed pods. And the seed pods, you know, if you grow a radish, you just get one radish root if you're harvesting it for the roots. But if you let it go to seed, you know, one plant will make 40 seed pods. And the seed pods are so good. They're really crunchy and spicy and have a little bit of sweet to them, and they're really fun to snack on. So that's a great one. And, you know, pretty much anyone can grow radishes in containers or out in the garden. So that's one that has, I call them extra edibles. They're kind of the extra little things you get to eat if you grow your own food.
Yeah, also a great way to win friends and influence people, I think, at dinner when you can haul out your trove of, you know, radish pods and get to talk about, you know, what that is and why your guests are lucky to have you in their lives. I know there are some plants where, like, certain parts of the plants are edible and certain parts aren't. And I guess rhubarb is, like, the first thing that comes to mind. I mean, is that an old wives' tale that if I eat rhubarb leaves, I'm going to, you know, turn into a toad? Or why is it?
Well, you'd probably get pretty sick, but you also probably wouldn't eat them because they're so sour. So rhubarb leaves have a really high concentration of oxalic acid, which is what makes the stalks sour. And you wouldn't want to eat the leaves for that reason. You know, there's plants in the tomato family, the solanaceous family, so tomatoes, potatoes, peppers, tomatillos, they don't really have edible leaves. But, you know, other than that, like, all the in the cabbage family, you know, if you go kohlrabi, which is a really fun, unusual vegetable, it kind of looks like a UFO, it has great edible leaves that most people throw away. And then a lot of the cabbage family members, like kale, if they overwinter, they will get these broccoli-like flower buds in spring that are so amazing and delicious. So they have lots of edible parts.
Nice, nice. Well, we are going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll have Melissa Metrick, who's actually the garden manager here at Roberta's, join us in the studio, so hang tight.
She's dancing by herself in a mother's summer dress. Oh, kid, she doesn't need your help. Studied art in Spain, tall boys across her brain. Yeah, tall boys, men, they'll do anything.
You're listening to Boy Crazy by Cookies.
Through her parade, all lined up, marching back and forth all day. She's boy crazy. She's boy crazy. Oh, she's boy.
Ranch grass-fed beef, pasture raised on 150,000 acres in Central California. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, free-range, sustainably produced, humane. Hearst Ranch grass-fed beef, the authentic flavor of the American West.
All right, we are back. You're listening to The Farm Report. I'm your host, Erin Fairbanks. We are on the line with Willie Galloway, author of Grow, Cook, Eat, and we have just been joined in the studio by Melissa Metrick, who is the head gardener here at Roberta's. Melissa, welcome to the studio.
Hello, thank you.
So before we jump into more gardening talk, I just want to give a little shout out. The song that we heard during the break is your band, is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's my band, Cookies.
And if people want to tune in and hear a little bit more of your work of the audio variety, where can they find you?
We have a website that's cookiesltd.com. So it's like cookieslimited.com. And you could download songs and stuff like that on it.
Awesome. Yeah. Check it out. So for people who haven't had the pleasure of hanging out here at Roberta's, can you kind of run us through what the garden setup looked like here? Because it's not like we have some pastoral back area that you're out there with a, you know, tiller. So what does it mean to be a garden manager here in the middle of Bushwick, Brooklyn?
Okay. So Roberta's in general, well, we do a lot of events. We kind of have a kind of like a backyard area, and in that backyard area we have 40, I would say, like 7 square foot planters. So most of our things are in, or most of our plants that we grow are in planters that we can move around. So if we have weddings or if we have a huge party like Tiki Disco, we could kind of, you know, just move the planters around. And also if one area gets better sun than the other. So it's very mobile. It's very like a multi-use space.
Nice. So. And does that kind of impact what types of things you can or can't grow?
Yes and no. Our planters are pretty deep. So we grow everything from like peach trees and apple trees to, you know, basic salad greens or tomatoes or cucumbers or, yeah, so we try to grow everything. We're slowly but surely learning the space better and kind of what things, you know, what certain varieties can tolerate what, you know, environments. So
sure.
Yeah.
Sure. So, Willie, you were actually here at Roberta's not too long ago. You guys did some work together. Can you tell us a little bit about what that was like?
Yeah, first of all, I was so impressed with the garden. You know, I especially liked the little orchard area. Melissa had planted chamomile and other herbs to lure in pollinators, and it was just a really cool garden. And I especially liked also the rooftop garden that's on top of your studio.
Yeah, I forgot. Cool. I forgot to mention that. Yep.
So, I did a talk on herbs because, you know, herbs are something that they're plants that are expensive to buy but easy to grow. They do well in containers. They'll live, many of them, for, you know, several years. So they're great for urban gardeners. And then there's just a lot of applications that you can use them in. And, you know, they have different edible parts to their plant, you know, to the plants. And so I thought that would be a good thing to chat about at Roberta's. Most of the gardeners there would be living in Brooklyn and really not have a ton of space for growing.
So, Melissa, have you guys found there's like a particular herb that works really well here, or is the kitchen been requesting something in particular? I feel like I walked by some sorrel earlier. Was that from your garden here, or?
We do grow sorrel. That's like one of our baby greens. But I would say it's kind of funny. A lot of people or gardeners almost consider this kind of like a weed in a way. But mint is always really easy to grow. It'll always come back. And right now our bar is using mountain mint for some of their drinks. So we definitely grow mint. We grow thyme. We grow sage. Rosemary. Actually, we're putting rosemary around the bar because sometimes, you know, certain areas have certain pests or flies or something like that. So we put certain plants in certain areas to actually deter pests as well. So, for example, like rosemary is supposed to deter flies. So we kind of definitely, not only do we like eat all these different varieties and vegetables and stuff like that, but I try to kind of implement it in like a pest management program as well here, like just to help us out to grow organically and stuff like that. So it's finding out like all the different uses of the plant and yeah.
Nice. So Willie, have you in the gardening community, I mean, is there some kind of status hierarchy among the herbs where people are like, oh, mint, like, yeah, anybody can grow that. But if you can get, you know, perfect pluches of chervil, you're really a master gardener. I mean, is that a thing or not really?
I guess there's like state fairs and stuff where people are competitive with their gardening stuff, but in general, I find gardeners actually to be pretty generous. And, you know, you might struggle growing something in your yard that someone else finds like really easy to grow. So no.
All right. So I want to, in my backyard, I had my roommate planted a couple of basil plants and a rosemary plant, and the rosemary is now a rosemary bush. It's huge. It's growing everywhere. And all the basil plants just died. So maybe, Melissa, can you give us a sense of where we might have gone wrong?
Were they planted in the same pot?
They were in separate pots, but they were next to each other in a super sunny kind of all day situation.
Well, from what you say, I mean, it's been a very hot and dry summer here. I mean, it just started to rain within the last couple of weeks. But before that, it was like 100 degrees every day here. So if you weren't watering your basil plant every day, then that could be a thing. Because also, I know rosemary likes dry conditions. So if the rosemary is doing really well, And you're not really like watering it that much or whatever, it's kind of like you said, it's kind of more like a shrub, like a bush. Like you could just plant it and it'll just do its thing and you don't really have to do a lot of maintenance. Basil, on the other hand, is like a little bit more temperamental and just a little bit more sensitive. So you'd have to water it every day. You'd also have to cut off the flowers to promote it to grow more leaves. Because since basil is an annual, it after it goes to seed, that's like the end of its life process. So it'll just be like, oh, I did my job. Okay, I'm done.
I'm out. What, so. Wiley, would you recommend, I mean, any kind of particular herb varieties as like an easy starter herb for not very responsible gardeners like myself?
I think, you know, thyme is really easy to grow and hard to kill. sage, any of those sort of perennial Mediterranean herbs are easy. And then, like Melissa said, mint is awesome. And I think sometimes people forget that you can use it in savory ways, too. So if you could only grow one mint, I would probably choose spearmint or spearmint variety because it tastes good and, you know, like tabbouleh and sort of whole grain salads, mint can add kind of a little special flavor or in salad rolls, like Vietnamese salad rolls. And then, of course, you can use it in cocktails or to flavor desserts. So it's hard to kill mint. I just was gone for like 10 days and my husband forgot to water my mint that was in a pot. And it looked a little bedraggled, but it was still alive.
So, yeah, I'm wondering about that because that's happened I've seen that happen to houseplants at my house where someone forgets to water it. I mean, is there a way to tell, like, for sure that the plant has died? Or if I come back and it's like the pot's all dried up, I mean, do I just put a lot of water on it? Do I put a little bit? I mean, how do I, like, resuscitate something that I have neglected and possibly killed? Either one of you guys can jump in.
I would say that you probably would want to soak the plant a little bit. And also, it depends on what kind of plant it is. Like, if it was a basil plant and it just kind of lost all of its leaves and died, since it's an annual, it's probably, you know, done. But if it's something more like a perennial that will come back, they're used to, like, their general life thing is in the wintertime, or if it gets too dry, it'll kind of just let itself go, and then once it's in the right conditions again, it'll come back. So I think it depends on what kind of plant it is, but usually the way I go is I'll try to water it, I'll, like, you know, pay attention to it a little bit more, and then I get really excited if it comes back.
And be like, I brought it back to life.
Yeah, but also you could trim it and prune it, and that also will promote new growth. So it's like if something looks really damaged, just, you know, prune it back, and then water it, treat it well, and yeah. Hope for the best, I guess.
Nice. So, Willie, your book, Grow, Cook, Eat, is available wherever books are sold, but you're also in some clothing stores and cooking stores. Can you tell us a little bit about where else people can find you?
Yeah, so my book's in Anthropology and Williams-Sonoma, a lot of different little nurseries and shops. So, I think that it has a pretty cute cover, I think. And so I think, it works well in those shops that are looking for a pretty book to put out. But and it has gorgeous pictures. My friend Jim Hinkins took the photos. My hope, and I'm real pleased with how the book turned out, is that it was beautiful and people would be inspired when they look at it. And then they'd also find a lot of really useful and easy to apply information as well.
Nice, and I think that's definitely the case. I would recommend checking it out if you want to get into gardening, but also tons of really lovely recipes in there. And I mean, if people want to get a little bit of flavor for your work, you do have a website, www.digginfood.com. That's diggin with no G. And one of the things I thought was so great about your website, you actually do some video work on there, and you do like a little bit of like recipe cooking demo. I mean, you're really kind of a jack of all trades in the kitchen. I mean, is there any portion or recipe or thing that you would recommend people checking out as kind of a signature dish that you would eat at your home or share with your friends?
Probably my favorite thing to eat right now, and I think there's a video and there's also a recipe in the book, is a pasta that has a no-cook tomato sauce. So basically you whisk together some olive oil and lemon juice, and then you toss in some herbs. I think the video has like dill and feta cheese, and the recipe in the book has parmesan and basil and parsley. And then you cut up a whole bunch of cherry tomatoes, like 4 cups of them, and stick it in there and just kind of let them marinate. And then you cook the pasta and you pour the hot pasta over the tomatoes and herbs and just kind of let it sit there, and the heat from the pasta cooks the tomatoes slightly. And then you just toss it all together, and it's good at room temperature or hot. It makes a lot, so you can have some for lunch the next day. And, you know, you only have to have your stove on long enough to boil the pasta. So it's great for when it's hot.
Yeah, we are definitely have been in dire need of those types of recipes all summer long. Melissa, you have been at the garden here at Roberta's for the last 2 years.
Yep.
What's the plan for the future? I mean, is there any big changes in the garden world here at Roberta's, or what are you thinking as far as like a little bit more long-term planning?
Well, it's kind of funny. I feel like every year there's a list of new projects that we're working on. Like, for example, this year I just started working on an aquaponic setup in a greenhouse at Roberta's. And then, you know, I may start a cutting flower garden. And the big thing that I've been focusing on this year is also doing more of like an education program. So we had some children from the community center down the block come here, and we kind of started a mentorship program. So it was kind of like a pilot program. So for a month on Saturdays, we had kids come here and they would work with me and my interns, and we'd teach them how to garden. So I think just having more school groups come and teaching them, you know, how to garden and what we're doing and how, you know, it works within a restaurant and stuff like that. And yeah, and also just building new planters. And yeah, we're always...
keep on trucking.
Always doing new things, yeah.
Nice. And now the rest of the garden crew, because I know you're not doing everything by yourself, is it a volunteer operation? Is it a paid operation? If people want to get involved, what do they do?
I mostly have interns. So I have about 7 interns now, and they usually stay on with me for either one season or, you know, I have some interns that just stayed on for spring, but I try to get people to kind of, my interns to stay the whole summer long and into the fall, just so they know the whole process and they could see the plants, like all the stages of, you know, the different seasons and stuff, and really get to know the space. 'Cause I feel like you need to really be somewhere for a little while to understand how the environment is and how the plants grow in it. And yeah.
So. Nice. And if someone's interested in coming as an intern, do they just email you? Or?
Yeah, they could just email me garden@robertaspizza.com. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Willie, Melissa, thank you guys so much for joining us to do a little gardening talk. And thanks for bearing with my, you know, long belated admission that I don't actually ever grow anything. I just buy it and cook it and talk about it here on the Farm Report. That is the show for today, but stay tuned because we are going to be coming up next with the Grow NYC Green Market Farmers Market update right after the show's wrap. Tune in every week, Thursdays at 1 o'clock. All of our shows are available on our archives, www.heritageradionetwork.org, or as a free download through iTunes. So check it out and tune in next week. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening. Hot at the green market? You're about to find out now. It's the Grow NYC Market Update.
All right. Thanks for tuning in. You are listening to the Grow NYC Green Market Update, and we are on the line with Jean Hodesh. Jean, what is happening at the market?
Hey, Erin. Good to hear from you. Well, it just so happens that we are in the midst of National Farmers Market Week this week, which is very exciting. It's prime time out there. I was in Union Square yesterday morning, and it is just a sea of heirloom tomatoes and eggplants and basil and sunflowers and peaches and piles of corn. It's our favorite time of year, to say the least.
That's awesome. So what are your recommendations if we're putting together a shopping list for the markets this weekend? What should we be looking for? What's on its way out? What's on its way in? Like, give us the inside scoop.
Sure. Well, just yesterday, the New York Times dining section, the front cover story was all about what a great tomato season we're having this year, which is really exciting because the last couple of years have been pretty rough for the tomato crop. So I would say get them while you can, and they are amazing. I've been eating tomatoes pretty much nonstop. So you can find all manner of heirlooms from a number of different farmers. Also, the eggplants are really, really amazing right now. And, you know, the great thing about shopping at the market is that, of course, you can get tomatoes and eggplant at the supermarket, but when you go to the farmer's market, there are so many different varieties that you might have never heard of before. So those would be my recommendations. The corn is so sweet right now. You know, despite the drought that we've been experiencing, you know, when people can make sure that their fields are irrigated, when that food comes in is really sweet because it's been so hot outside. So that's why the tomatoes are doing so well. But the corn I've had has also been really delicious. And then the stone fruit is unstoppable. So I just saw kind of the end of the apricots, but peaches and nectarines are in their prime right now, and plums. There are so many different varieties of plums that are filling the market. So great for just eating, you know, as you buy them from the farmer, but they are also really delicious if you take them home and cook them down into jam, and then you can have that, you know, through the fall and winter if you're able to not eat it right away. And it's also a really great time for berries, which are super sweet at this point in the summer. So blackberries are out there. They're also really delicious if you want to turn them into jam, and blueberries, jam, put them in pancakes, make pies. Those are all in my market basket.
Nice.
I'm stopping by.
That sounds great. We actually had Lena McCarthy on the network earlier this week talking about her new book, Jam On, The Craft of Canning Fruit, and she gives some great tips. It's like a great spot for people if they want to check out recipes for jam and tips for preserving the summer's bounty. So, Jean, thanks so much for joining us for the Grow NYC Market Update. Any other events, any other cool things happening at any of the markets that we should be sure not to miss this week?
This week, well, there are cooking demonstrations happening, and it's a great time of year if you get to the market and you see, say, a pepper that you've never seen before and you don't know how to cook it. Stop by the market info tent and pick up some free recipes. Ask the market manager what they think is the best, you know, find in the market that week, and ask your farmers how to cook their produce.
Awesome. And follow you guys on Twitter. That's, like, I think the best way to get kind of the super real-time info on what's hot and where it is, and even, like, what's sold out or about to sell out, so you can hustle up. The Twitter feeds again, can you remind us?
Sure. We've got several of them, and actually if you go to our website, grownyc.org, go to grownyc.org/follow us, and you can see a list of our different Facebook pages for different regions around New York City, and then also the Twitter feeds for the different regions around New York City.
Awesome. Jean, thanks so much for that. Tune in next week, 1:35, when we will find out what's hot, what's going down at the green markets here in New York City. Jean, thanks a lot. Talk soon.
Thanks. Bye-bye.